It's been nice because I feel like every week there's at least one or two newsworthy items that we get to talk about on the episode throughout the months of summer, which gives us a ton of prep leading into the regular season and the start of the 2022-2023 campaign. We've got Bruins news, Flames news, Wild news, and a whole lot more as the band gets back together here on episode 145 of the Second Thoughts Hockey Podcast. Let's go! It is just after 1 o'clock here, Tuesday, August the 9th, and we are back with another episode of the Second Thoughts Hockey Podcast. Cal Gamard here, your host. As always, you can follow along on Instagram and Twitter at ST Hockey Podcast, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Once we get back into the fall and the seasons start going again, I'm going to do a better job at trying to get guests on the show and doing it in advance. I feel like I have got a little bit more time once the summer ends into the fall, so I'll be able to try and contact with some people and kind of give you a little bit more of a dual dynamic here. I know for the majority of the podcast, it's normally just me giving my takes, my thoughts and whatnot. And I do like some of the podcasts and individuals that do that. I do like the narrative sometimes of having two people. So I will try to get better at that moving forward. But we got news involving the Boston Bruins. Two players, one returning for another season, one coming back from overseas to play. The Calgary Flames have officially won the Matthew Tkachuk trade. And there's a deal that's going to tell you why. The Kirill Kaprizov situation. I didn't get a chance to talk about it last week, but I want to kind of follow up and give a little bit more on it. PK Subban and why he'd be an intriguing piece for a few different teams. And then a bunch of other notable signings that have taken place. Arbitration is right in the thick of it, so we'll go over all the signings that have gone on so far. But I want to start with this here. The band is back together in Boston. The Bruins take care of not just two players. They also signed Pavel Zacha to a one-year deal worth $3.5 million. But they re-signed Captain Patrice Bergeron to a one-year $2.5 million with another $2.5 million in incentives. David Krejci comes from overseas, rejoins the club on a one-year deal worth $1 million on the cap and an additional $2 million in incentives. Last year, before the year started, I said that the Achilles heel for the Boston Bruins was not having a second line center and going with Charlie Coyle. I don't mind Charlie Coyle at all as a center, but I like him a lot more as a third line center than a second line center. David Krejci to me was always this X factor, this secondary player that was always grossly underrated throughout the entirety of his career. And I really feel like, albeit with a barrage of injuries that the Bruins had to deal with, they really missed having that second line punch. It was always, what was it? It was the perfection line. It was Bergeron, it was Marchand, it was Pasternak. Boston had nothing else outside of that, to the point where Boston took David Pasternak off that line and put him on the second line with Taylor Hall and Charlie Coyle to try to have some sort of second unit that could produce offensive production. Now, David Krejci, and I understand he's a year older. I also understand that he is a guy who has been out of the league for a year, and maybe there will be a little bit of rust in trying to adapt back to the NHL game. But David Krejci, 36 years of age, just 2 years ago in the COVID-shortened season, had 44 points in 51 games. On top of that, had 9 points in 11 playoff games during that postseason. I think that this is going to be another story that is going to get swept under the rug and not be known as a big deal, because David Krejci, his entire career, has always been underrated. I would say only undervalued outside of the Boston Bruins camp. Like, the Bruins, I think, really missed it. They knew they missed it. Just to put it in perspective, what David Krejci has done throughout his career, I'm going to go since 2008, 2009. And you're like, Kyle, why are you going back? Just hear me out here, okay? 08, 09, 82 games played, 73 points. 09, 10, 52 points, 79 games. 10-11, 62 points in 75 games, 62 points in 79 games, 69 points in 80 games, 63 points in 72 games, 54 points in 82 games, 44 points in 64 games, 73 points in 81 games, 43 in 61, 44 in 51. He has scored more than 20 goals five different times in his career, or is that four? Four different times in his career. He has had over 40 assists in God knows how many years. Oh, and in the playoffs, through in 156 career playoff games, has 124 points. There are some players that age better than others, specifically based on their game. Also, last year, Patrice Bergeron, just put age in example. Patrice Bergeron was 36 years of age this past year. Or sorry, Patrice Bergeron was 37 years of age this past year and had one of the greatest seasons of his career. In his 18th year, 25 goals and 40 assists in 73 games, winning 62% of his draws, had an expected goals for percentage at 5-on-5 within the, I think he led the NHL in that stat. He also topped the league in 5-on-5 scoring chances, and also logged more than 39 total minutes in those situations. The reason I'm saying the age factor, to me, it's not really an issue with me, because these players age better than others. This is not Milan Lucic. It's not Louis Eriksson. These are different types of players. They are smart, two-way centers. The best perspective I can put it in, do you remember Pavel Datsyuk? Pavel Datsyuk, center for the Detroit Red Wings. Henrik Zetterberg, same thing. Also, if you think that me comparing and putting those two in the conversation is unfair to Pavel Datsyuk, I think that's a slap in the face to Patrice Bergeron, who has been there stride for stride in those Selke votes, has been there representing his country. He has been as good a player as you can possibly imagine, and a player every team in the league wants. And finally getting back David Krejci as a part of the Boston Bruins organization is going to open up a world of possibilities for a team that genuinely was hurting for a second line center. Because now, Charlie Coyle goes down to the third line. It gives you a legitimate third line center. And it gives now Taylor Hall a little bit of a different option outside of Charlie Coyle on the second line. And probably adds a lot more scoring punch. They control the puck a little bit more, take some pressure off their defense and goaltending. This is what a really, really good two-way center who can both score and play defense does for your team. Now, for fun, I'm going to go on to Daily Faceoff right now and look at the line combinations as to what their lines, quote-unquote, could look like. First line, Marchand, Bergeron, Pasternak. That's not moving anywhere. This is where things all of a sudden change. Taylor Hall, David Krejci, Jake DeBrusk. Pavel Zacha, Charlie Coyle, Craig Smith. And then your fourth line is now Trent Frederick, tough as nails, Thomas Nosek, Nick Foligno. Lindholm, McAvoy, Grizzlick, Carlo, Forbert, Clifton. And then your goaltender, Swayman Allmark. That's a way deeper team than they were last year. They were struggling. At points, I'm pretty sure Nick Foligno was playing third line center for them. And he was tasked with the defensive responsibilities. I know he played wing for the most part, but he can play all three positions. He can play center at times. He can play left wing. Right now, he's listed as a right winger on the fourth line for the Boston Bruins. He can play all three positions. Don't at me with the whole he's not a center thing. But they had at times they had Thomas Nosek up there. I'm pretty sure Craig Smith was filling in at third line center. Smith's a better winger. He's played center. He's a better winger. I think that this move, in my honest opinion, gives the Bruins an opportunity to finish top three in the Atlantic. 100%. I wholeheartedly think that they could easily upend Florida. Tampa Bay's taking a step back. Heck, they may even take out Toronto. Like, I'm not even kind of kidding. They could legitimately end up as a top three team in the Atlantic Division and not have to worry about a wild card spot and potentially host playoff games in the first round. That's how much respect I have for David Krejci. Everybody knows how good Patrice Bergeron is. But David Krejci is the X factor. And age, in my opinion, it is not a... That is not something I'm thinking of. Because these are the type of players that age significantly better than maybe some in this league. It is a young man's league. Absolutely. Sidney Crosby, Bergeron, Malkin, Krejci, Ovechkin. All these players have aged gracefully. Ovi's kind of the weird one because he's a unicorn, because he's physical, he's tough, he's grinding, but he still scores 50 a year. It's stupid. But despite, you know, despite it's Makar, it's Matthews, McDavid, McKinnon, there's a lot of M's in there, Dreisaitl, Marner, Panarin, you know what I mean? Like, it is a young man's game. I get it. But there are just certain players that as time goes on and they get older, they somehow age gracefully. Bergeron's one of them, as we saw last year, and I'm telling you right now, so is David Krejci. And by the way, David Krejci is not going to be centering the first line. He is a secondary scoring option with Taylor Hall and a revamped Jake DeBrusque. And maybe that gets moved around. Maybe they're like, listen, Coyle's had a great season. Then all of a sudden, Krejci becomes your third line center. And he's more of a shutdown guy. Good luck if that's the case. God, if Coyle finds another gear and all of a sudden Krejci's your third line center... good luck. Oh, and the money is also really good. Getting the band back together, this is, I think, their last year to do it. I think this is like the one last year of hurrah. We're going for it. We traded for Zaka. We signed, like Lindholm signed. McAvoy's in the prime of his career. We really like this goaltender Swayman. He's not making a lot of money. Bergeron comes back in a really nice deal. Krejci comes back in a really nice deal. And it's also the final year of David Pastrnak's contract before he needs a new one. I think this is the last. This is like the band's getting back together for one last run. And I wouldn't bet off the Bruins. Not with that duo back. I wouldn't. All right, let's move on here. So there's been some time in between the trade between the Calgary Flames and the Florida Panthers involving Matthew Tkachuk and Jonathan Huberdeau and Mackenzie Weegar. Those are the three main contributors. And last week on the podcast, I said, if Calgary just signs one of those two guys, they win the deal because they got a first-round pick, they got a former third-round prospect, and, of course, the defenseman. They get a year of each player. Well, now the Flames, they've locked up Jonathan Huberdeau. It is an 8-year extension worth $10.5 million. The deal kicks in not this season but next season, and Calgary gets a player locked in for the next 8 years foreseeable future. Now, Jonathan Huberdeau, I believe, will be 29 when the deal starts. So this deal's going to go till he's 37. No, probably not thrilled about the fact that Jonathan Huberdeau is going to be making 10.5 until he is 35, 36, 37. Those years aren't going to be spectacular. However, Jonathan Huberdeau came out, said, I'm thrilled to be part of the Flames organization for a long term, excited for the new chapter, and I am committed to this team. I'll give everything I have on and off the ice, and I can't wait to play in front of a passionate Flames fans. You know the flip side argument about how players in the United States only want to play in the U.S.? I don't know. Maybe make the same argument of Canadian players only want to play in Canada. Jonathan Huberdeau in Florida didn't work out a deal, goes to Calgary. Oh, I'll sign a new deal. Done. Now the money. Let's get into the money for a second, because everyone's like, well, Tkachuk makes 9.5 in Florida and Huberdeau makes 10.5 in Calgary. Right. Remember the Florida thing? There's no state tax. Dallas, Texas, there's no state tax. They can afford it. Because they're not paying taxes. They probably took the deal and said, hey, Tkachuk was like probably going, if I make 9.5 in Florida or Dallas or wherever, and I make 10.5 in Calgary, Taxes alone would probably eat it up, and the deal in Florida, you end up making and earning and keeping more of your money. Unfortunately, that's just the way the world works. Taxes are a thing. Taxes are a thing. Taxes are a thing in a lot of places in the States. There are very few places where taxes are not a thing. Tampa Bay and Florida just so happen to be two of them. Dallas is also one of them. It's the way that things go. That's why there are also other markets. Yeah, there are tons of taxes in New York and Toronto. You know what those are also? Media-crazed frenzy markets with lucrative promoting, endorsement deals. You make a lot of extra money on the side being a big name face in a big market. And I'm not saying that Tampa is not a big market. I'm not saying that Florida is not a big market. But, you know, Tampa Bay has, outside of the Lightning and the Panthers, they've also got a Major League Baseball team, a massive college football fan base. They've got the Tampa Bay Buccaneers that they have to worry about. Miami is not too far away with the Heat. You see where I'm getting with this? In Toronto, in Calgary, the Flames are the mecca of that area. The rivalry between them and Edmonton. Toronto has a baseball team and a basketball team. The Leafs are still the alpha. Why? Because hockey is the predominant sport here. Florida has been good over the last little bit. But remember the jokes about Florida not being able to fill up to 10,000 fans in their stadiums when they were god-awful? Tampa Bay, as good as they have been for as long as they have been, and it's felt like a while, there was a time where Tampa Bay was not a very good team. And they did not sell out. And there were bigger tickets going around. Yes, the salary there, you do not have to pay taxes. But I guarantee you, Jonathan Huberdeau is going to earn all that back in endorsement deals in Calgary. They are going to make him and surround him as the guy. Hell, they might even make him captain. But after this deal got signed, in my opinion, Calgary won that trade now. It doesn't matter if Mackenzie Weegar leaves, because the deal now will be Matthew Tkachuk in a fourth for Jonathan Huberdeau for a 25 conditional first-round pick, and Cole Schwint, who is a former third-round selection. Oh, and they still get the year of Mackenzie Weegar, and they still could potentially sign him long-term too. And if not, they could move him, or maybe they make a deep playoff run and he's a part of the roster. But I said it before, I will stick to it. If Calgary found a way to sign one of those two, which they did, that was automatically slam dunk, they win the deal. And now they've done it. And I just want to reiterate the fact that Florida does not have a first round pick for the next 4 years, including this year, 2022, 2023, 2024, and 2025. Their next first round pick is in 2026. That is 5 years away from right now. It's absolutely crazy. And by the way, for the people that are harping on Jonathan Huberdeau, it's like, oh, it's an overpayment. One, the cap's starting to go up again. So that deal in the next couple of years, it will be less percentage of the cap as the years go on. Number two, he had 115 points last year. I think he hit 40 goals. And he was fifth in Hart Trophy voting. Fifth. And he played with a guy named Alexander Barkov, who he was ranked higher than. I understand it's a lot of money. But sometimes you got to pay a little extra to keep your guys around. Some organizations do it. Calgary just witnessed their two leading scorers leave their team. They were not going to let Jonathan Huberdeau walk out for nothing. And they were not going to at least, they'll be damned if they weren't going to at least try and sign him long term. They gave him the same deal they offered Johnny Gaudreau, who also had 115 points. It only made sense. Calgary probably didn't even waste any time. They probably went right to Huberdeau and said, listen, we're not going to BS you. We're getting right to it. Johnny Gaudreau at 150 points. You at 115 points. We offer Johnny 8 years, $10.5 million a year. We're offering the same thing to you. No negotiations, no tactics. Here you go. And they probably looked at each other and went, okay. And now the deal's done. Good on him. Happy for Huberto. Happy for Calgary. Great job by Brad True Living. I love it. I know the last 2 or 3 years on that deal are not going to be fun. 35, 36, and 37 at $10.5 million is not going to be great. But enjoy the first 4 or 5 because he's going to be a great player. He also might be a player that ages very well. We will not know that. But we'll see as time goes on. But congrats to Huberto. Congrats to the Flames. You got your guy. All right, I want to move on to this another story that came out. I didn't really touch on it last week because I wanted more time to read into it and just see what was going on. So, Kirill Kaprizov, after a few tough weeks, is finally back in Minnesota after leaving Russia and trying to get back to the United States. This was according to The Athletic's Michael Russo. So, he departed from his home nation last week, or no, 2 weeks ago, by way of Turkey, and touched down in New York City on the weekend. The reason he had to fly out of Turkey is because there are rules and regulations surrounding the fact that you cannot fly directly from Russia to the United States, especially, of course, with the war with Ukraine going on, which is still happening and is still affecting many people out there. So the way that European players from that area are able to get back in the United States are either from two places, one, Dubai, or two, Turkey. Now, originally, Kaprizov went straight to Russia, was supposed to go from Dubai, panicked apparently, went back to Russia, so they had to work it out, and eventually the team, one of the representatives from Minnesota, found him to get him to Turkey, and then back through to the United States. I feel like we're going to be reading and hearing more about this as well, especially with a lot of other players who go home and visit their families in Russia and other parts of Europe, and the only way back is through Dubai or Turkey as well, and I wonder if Kaprizov originally was planning on going a little bit later, and Minnesota was like, no, 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 you need to get here now because this is going to be a process. We need you for training camp when things start kicking in. And I'm happy to hear that this is all said and done, but it will not be shocking to me if we hear about this from other players down the line. This isn't the biggest story I really wanted to get into because I know it's been in a week or so now, but there wasn't really a known story as to why Kaprizov was able to exit Russia the first time, but there were issues to do with the work visa, according to Russo, but nevertheless, I'm glad he's there, I'm glad he's happy. Kaprizov, who is, by the way, 25 years of age, which is insane, set the single-season scoring record for the Minnesota Wild, putting up 108 points in 81 games. The Calder Trophy winner as the league's top rookie in 2021. He is going to be a guy who continues to be a huge part of the Wild's future and process and everything like that. So I'm glad that, because this could have been a way bigger story. Like, there could have been issues, there could have been complications. Remember that, what was the goaltender for the Philadelphia Flyers? I don't have his name on me right now, but like, there were stories about he was picked up and he was unfortunately brought to he was held somewhere after trying to travel from Russia to the United States and was held for a little bit. And I'm still waiting for an update on that story, but that could have very well been the deal with Kirill Kaprizov. So I'm happy to know that he's safe. Hopefully his family is safe and this doesn't become an issue for other players traveling from Russia to the United States or even to Canada. And the final story I want to get to here before we talk about some of the deals that were signed over the last week or so in the NHL, it's a very intriguing player who is looking, is not done yet with the NHL, who wants to play to a contender. He thinks he's given himself a good opportunity and wants himself to be in a situation where he plays, where he feel like he's a good fit for the team and is working towards the goal of competing for a Stanley Cup. PK Subban wants to play, his manager told the Montreal Gazette's Stu Cowan. But at this stage in his career, he wants to play somewhere where he'd have a good opportunity and be provided an opportunity to play and be in a good role. Said, quote, without sounding too aggressive, I think he's earned the privilege to be somewhat selective in terms of where he would play so that it works for the team and it works with him. In other words, he doesn't just want to play anywhere. Now, here's the interesting thing. Subban is no longer in the 8-year, $9 million cap hit, that it was a very difficult situation to try and trade him from the New Jersey Devils, in which saw him get moved from Montreal to Nashville to Jersey and now is a free agent. From what I am reading right now, it sounds like teams are currently trying to move money to potentially sign him to a shorter-term deal. He's only 33. Everyone thinks he's like 35, 36. He's 33. He had 5 goals, 17 assists in 77 games this past season while averaging just 18 minutes and 18 seconds of time on ice. Evolving Hockey apparently projects Subban to sign a 2-to-3-year deal around the $3.5 to $3.8 million cap hit. So somewhere between the 3 or 4 range. To me, I'm out on that. At one point, he was one of the league's top defensemen. He was a Norris Trophy finalist for a few years, and he won it back in 2013. But when you give me 20 to 25 points, play 18 minutes, which sounds like you're either on the bottom pair or at the very best, the second pair, and defensively, you've seen a little bit of a drop-off, unfortunately. Now, maybe in a new team, new organization, new defensive partner. I've come to learn that a lot of your play depends on your defensive partner and how you work with one another, your style of play, your physicality, your connection with one another. I'd be very intrigued to see, one, where PK feels he would be valuable, would be a valuable asset to, and two, which team thinks that they want to take a chance and have PK Subban as a part of their organization. I think I'd bring in Subban. I would not bring him in on anything more than $3 million. I would go anywhere from the $2 to the $2.85 or $2.75 million range. I would not go higher than that, especially if you're looking to add more of a depth position and a player who is probably going to play in your bottom pair and can play up if need be, barring injury, especially if it's on a longer-term deal. If it's a one-year thing, sure. If you have the money, you sign him at 1 year, $3.5 million. I have no problem with that. It's when I start seeing the 2 to 3 years at 3.5 to upwards of 3.8. That's where I have a problem. Why? Because if it doesn't work out, that deal is going to be significantly more difficult to deal. Eating money for multiple years is not something teams are looking forward to. But if it's a 1 year, a team will eat that contract for that year only, and then it's off the books moving forward. It's you just kind of forget it, put it off to the side, and it's over with. Again, I still think Subban is a player who has a lot left to give the league, has a lot left to prove to himself and to his teammates, his colleagues, everything like that. But I'd be very intrigued to see what teams would be willing to sign him to a deal, a multi-year deal, in the $3, $3.5, potentially $4 million range. For fun right now, let's just go to cap friendly. And let's just see the cap hits for all the teams. A team like the Anaheim Ducks. But the Anaheim Ducks just signed John Klingberg. He's not going to go to a team like Arizona. A team that I am potentially thinking that could maybe sign him, that has gotten a lot of deals done and have gotten a lot of talk over the last little bit this offseason, the Ottawa Senators. One, could use a right-hand shot defenseman, have almost $8 million in projected cap space, could afford to maybe sign him to a multi-year deal around that $3 million range. Another team that I could see potentially signing him would be the Minnesota Wild. The Minnesota Wild are very solid in their defensive core. But a depth guy and the Wild have $4.3 million in cap space. Now, I'm not sure right now as to who is still an RFA on this team, who still needs a deal. But as I'm looking on their cap-friendly page, there is not a player who's sitting at zero UFA or RFA years that does not need a new contract right now. That could be a team that could potentially sign him. They've got Dumba. They've got Jared Spurgeon. They've got Kulikov and Brodin and Jake Middleton. But maybe bringing in another guy on their bottom pairing wouldn't be the worst thing in the world. The Avalanche have the cap room, but they've also got three defensemen who are already right-hand shooting. And one, they could still potentially be in on Nazem Kadri. And two, they're probably looking at signing, more importantly, their star player Nathan MacKinnon to a long-term deal, who has 1 year left at 1 year left on his contract with $6.3 million. I'm assuming that money is going, I'm assuming at minimum that deal is going to be worth double. like $12.5 million for McKinnon is it probably the starting point. That number is starting with at least a 12 for McKinnon, potentially getting up to $13 million. That can be something we talk about later on, but yeah, Nathan McKinnon also came out and said that he wants to be one of the league's highest paid players. That would mean at least doubling his salary, at least, which add another $6.3 million. So Colorado could, but I doubt it. But Minnesota and Ottawa are the two teams. What, one, they're potential playoff teams, and two, they could use a right-hand shot defenseman on their bottom pair and bring in. So whatever the case may be, I will be very interested to see as to who could make the room and also who ends up signing him moving forward. All right, let's get to some notable signings around the league that we haven't gotten to that have been done over the last few weeks or so with arbitration and everything happening. Let's start with the Vegas Golden Knights re-signing forward Nicholas Roy, a five-year contract with an average annual value of $3 million. He's coming off a deal that paid him just $750K per season. He had career highs at just 25 years of age, 15 goals, 24 assists in 78 games, and it was the first time playing more than 50 NHL games since debuting with Vegas in 2017-2018. Arizona signing restricted free agent Lawson Crouse to a five-year contract extension. The deal reportedly contains an AAV of $4.3 million. He had a career high, 25 years of age, 20 goals in 65 games for the Coyotes, and has 110 points over 346 regular season games since making his debut in 2016-2017. Winnipeg Jets signing forward Mason Appleton to a three-year contract extension carrying an AAV of approximately $2.17 million. He collected 8 goals and 13 assists in 68 games this past season with the Jets and the Seattle Kraken after the trade was made done. So the Jets get Appleton for a couple more years to stay. We mentioned the Flames a little bit earlier on. They signed defenseman Oliver Kylington to a new deal, which I believe has a cap of $2.5 million over 2 years. And forward Andrew Mangiapane to a three-year contract with an AAV of $5.8 million. He was an RFA with an arbitrary hearing scheduled for August the 5th, but of course that deal got done prior to. The 26-year-old scored 35 goals and 20 assists and playing just 15 minutes and 44 seconds across 82 games. And what a story for him. A sixth-round pick back in 2015. Now gets a significant pay raise, and good for him. 35 goals too, an absolute great season. He will be very much leaned upon with Gaudreau and Tkachuk no longer in Calgary as well. And then the final news and notes we'll get to before we head on out of here. It was just announced today that the New York Rangers are announcing Jacob Trouba will be the new captain of the organization. They named the 28-year-old defenseman captain today, giving him their first since Ryan McDonagh. So going from defenseman to defenseman, that was back in 2017-2018. Trouba is now the 28th captain in the history of the organization when it was founded back in 1926. And of course, McDonagh did wear the C for the better part of 4 years before being traded from New York to the Tampa Bay Lightning in February of 2018. Okay, that does it for today's episode. Appreciate it as always listening in. You can follow along and listen wherever on Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify. The episodes get posted through anchor.com where it like gives you an option at the different streaming sites you can go listen to. So whatever one you listen to, whatever one you have, I always appreciate it as always. Follow along on Instagram and Twitter at ST Hockey Podcast. And like I said at the very beginning of the episode, I'm going to try and get more guests on, especially as the fall goes around and once the season starts up. And I always love bringing on individuals and talking all things hockey. So enjoy the rest of the week. Enjoy the sun, the warm weather. And we're still very much in the middle of summer. So go take advantage of it as much as you possibly can. I'll see you next week. Until then, let's wrap.